Just last week, the United States Supreme Court decided not to decide a case involving a prisoner's claimed right to get whatever magazine he wants in his jail cell. And this made me extremely happy, because the justices let stand a lower court decision that upheld a prison warden's authority to stamp return to sender on certain unsavory prisoner subscriptions. I recall going on a prosecutor-sponsored tour of a prison in Baltimore and noting with horror that the prison library was amply stocked with magazines I'm willing to bet you won't find at your local library. I wondered not if the First Amendment applied, but if taxpayer money paid for those subscriptions. But I digress. The case that the justices let stand came from Arizona. Back in the early 90s, prisoners at a large jail there could receive whatever magazines they wanted. But this didn't sit well with the prison guards. Some prisoners clipped provocative pictures from those magazines and harassed the guards with them in many different ways. So the warden halted subscriptions to the magazines, and one prisoner, of course, filed a lawsuit claiming a First Amendment violation. Here's how a court looks at such a claim. 1. Does the restriction even burden First Amendment rights? The answer is yes. The First Amendment protects not only speakers, but listeners. And the prisoner argued, in effect, that he was listening to the magazine's speech and had every right to hear it, even if incarcerated. 2. Is the restriction reasonably related to an interest of legitimate concern to prisons? Because courts really don't want to second-guess wardens when the wardens make decisions on how best to run their prisons, courts use this fairly deferential standard of review when First Amendment rights are restricted behind bars. And yes, the appellate court judges found that banning pornographic magazines is indeed reasonably related to the prison's legitimate concern for maintaining jail security and rehabilitating inmates, that the restriction was also as neutral as it could be to help further that important government interest. 3. Can the prisoners at issue exercise their First Amendment rights in some other way? The court found that yes, they could. Although the prison placed pornographic images off limits, prisoners remained free to read provocative language, a cheesy novel, say. 4. Is some other less restrictive alternative available? No, the court found. The two alternatives proposed by inmates, a special reading room for this type of material, or psychological tests to determine which inmates were fit to receive it in cell, would cost too much money and not necessarily halt the harassment. So the appellate court, in a 7-4 ruling, upheld the restriction. No such magazines in the jail, thank you very much, and such a restriction withstands constitutional scrutiny. And last week, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear the case of the sabotaged subscriber. Meantime, according to news reports, he's moved on to prison. And that's probably exactly where he wanted to be. The warden in the case testified that people behind his bars often signed plea agreements to try to transfer away from his strict policies. No R-rated movies, no coffee, no smoking, Field and Stream only. He said he refused to run a cushier prison, one known, in his words, as Club Fed, like that Baltimore prison, I presume. And so today it's quite possible that the thwarted inmate isn't so thwarted anymore, happily exercising his self-proclaimed First Amendment right to read what he wants when he wants, which leads me to ask the question I asked after my surprising visit to the prison library. Who does pay for those subscriptions anyway? I'm Amy Guida.